Chapter 13. There were two positions to which commoners might be chosen and earn the title of Lord. Lord Ember, guardian and caretaker of the Eternal Flame, was one. Lord High Sheriff was the other. The Eternal Flame itself chose Lord Ember, so there were never disputes when a commoner was elevated, but selecting a Lord High Sheriff, nominated by the monarch and ratified by the House of Lords, often turned into a political struggle. The House of Lords generally looked down on elevating commoners to anything, and the Lord High Sheriff held enough power and prestige that many of the nobility coveted the assignment. When Queen Philippa had nominated Oliver Campbell, an experienced sheriff of Belshire, she had expected the usual rounds of debates, threats, counter-nominations, and excessive blather that could turn a simple task into a nightmare that stretched out for weeks. Fortunately, Oliver's golden reputation from 2 decades' worth of peaceful Belshire streets, in addition to the marks of the flame upon his palms, rendered opposition to his appointment nearly impossible. The House of Lords had ratified Oliver Campbell in what Queen Philippa reckoned was record time. The Lord High Sheriff was an imposing man with a silvery curling moustache and iron-grey hair. He wore his black and gold uniform with dignity and pride, though a tailor had adjusted the size of his pants and coat several times. He had no occasion to personally chase down criminals through the streets of Belshire, and the plentiful larder of a lord was simply too hard to resist. Rich food accepted, Oliver Campbell was a man of strict control and strict schedule. He had performed admirably in the 4 years since his appointment, and Philippa appreciated that this one decision of hers went uncriticised by the cantankerous House of Lords. They walked together out of the palace toward the offices of the anatomist, where they would inspect the bodies of the failed assassins. The weather was just as pleasant as the day before, and Philippa squinted into the sunshine as light flooded around her, eyes tired from a night spent thinking rather than sleeping. Not one person had been killed in the Harrickshire attack. Each would-be assassin shot only once, and all but one had missed. The third had only managed to graze a serving man. While the nobles were quick to thank the flame for their good fortune, Queen Philippa harboured gnawing doubts. "Were you able to make anything of their personal effects, Oliver?" she asked. He twisted one tendril of his moustache between 2 fingers.
"They were nondescript to a fault, Your Grace. The horses were of common stock, and their clothes and personal effects were of country make that would be found on either Cretesian or Bittermarchian commoners. There were no journals, books, or letters of any kind on their persons that would provide any clue as to their origins or motivations. Our best guess is that the rifles were of Bittermarchian make, but I could not prove it. I wish the Earl had not been quite so good a shot. We could have used one of them alive. Damn fine shooting, though."
The Queen nodded. Ambassador Horace Clout was a player of political games, and Philippa was beginning to realise that the fiery, annoying Cretesian representative might have actually started something serious this time. Her discernment, a gift from the flame that the sheriff shared, told her plainly that the ambassador's accusations of slaughter were a fabrication. But too often people acted like sheep, willing to obey any shepherd with a title and a loud mouth. In this case, Philippa needed absolute proof of Horace Clout's duplicity. His speech with the House of Lords fell on more sympathetic ears than she had hoped, especially when he had tried to paint her as a raving religious lunatic out of control. Due to the unsavoury nature of what an anatomist must do, the anatomist's building was separated from the Lord High Sheriff's offices in the Royal Park and was almost universally avoided. Despite diligent care by the anatomist's assistants, a peculiar odour always emanated from the edifice and leaked into the street. Oliver's long association with such smells and sights had rendered him oblivious to the discomfort they caused everyone else. Philippa wasn't so accustomed to the reek, and her stomach soured as Oliver opened the door for her. The bottom floor was a functional, though finely appointed, office. A set of stairs led up to the anatomist's laboratory. He had refused to work in the basement. He wanted windows and light, though cutting up human corpses simply couldn't be done on the ground floor, where passers-by might view a vomit-inducing eyeful through a window. This arrangement forced the anatomist's assistants to haul the corpses upstairs for examination and then back down to the basement for incineration. An assistant guided them up the stairs, and as they ascended, they could hear singing. Anatomist Norris Brakeman wasn't, in the Queen's estimation, altogether in his right mind. She wondered how anyone who spent their life hacking up dead bodies for clues could be in their right mind. The smell and the singing got stronger as they approached a single, uncomfortably stained door.
23 corpses under the tree. Drag one off and bring it to me. Cut it open so I can see what's in the corpse that was under the tree. 22 corpses under the tree. Drag one off and bring it to me. Cut it open so I can see what's in the corpse that was under the tree. 21.
The assistant opened the door, and the anatomist cut off his macabre melody in midstream. Norris Brakeman, while nearly as old as the High Sheriff, had the enviable gift of seeming much younger than his age. His messy black hair had yet to show a streak of grey, and large blue eyes remained untouched by dark circles or crow's feet. The Queen saw him little, but he always seemed happy and well-rested, his good mood as implacable as his good health. The three assassins lay on tables before him.
"Your Grace!" he said excitedly.
He stuffed a wad of intestines back into a body on the table and wiped his hands on a thoroughly befouled leather apron.
"Top of the morning to you, and Lord High Sheriff, welcome, welcome. Can I get you something to drink?"
How could anyone eat or drink anything in this place? The Queen wondered.
"No, Mr. Brakeman, what can you tell me about these three men?"
"Well, I've worked through the night examining these fellows. Skinny little chaps they are, ugly too, unshaved. Not very well endowed, if you take my meaning. Quite plain and unremarkable, but you know it took me a solid hour just to get past their wounds. One shot, each to the right side of the head, all of them within 4 inches of the ear. 4 inches! Most of us would be lucky to do that to a sleeping cow from 10 feet, but 3 times from 100 yards to men at a full gallop. Remind me not to step on the Earl's toes."
The High Sheriff was growing impatient.
"We're well aware of the extraordinary circumstances of their demise. We are interested in their origins, if you could get to the point."
Mr. Brakeman laughed, apropos of nothing.
"Well, some interesting things, of course, came up in my examination."
He lifted up the hand of the corpse in front of him.
"Note, if you will, the fingernails. Ridged, coarse, brittle. Poor nutrition indicative of a poor diet. More common in outlying areas where there isn't a good variety in the fare. Definitely indigent, simply deduced by the unfortunate state of their hygiene."
He pried open one of the mouths.
"Yellowing, crooked teeth, little decay. Not a lot of sweets in the diet. Hair roughly cut, probably by a sharp knife. But most interesting for your purposes was what I found in the digestive tract."
He reached a hand into one of the man's guts, but the High Sheriff brought him up short.
"Just tell us, Mr. Brakeman. We'll take your word for it." "Ah, sorry. My enthusiasm gets the better of me. Due to our agricultural preferences here in Bittermarch, and due to the longer growing season, our wheat is more refined. Critesian wheat is heartier, coarser, and has more hulls. These men ate bread of the Critesian variety, I am sure of it, and their general undernourished state seems to correspond with what we know about the agricultural difficulties in Cretus."
"Very interesting, Mr. Brakeman, thank you," the Queen said, ready to be gone.
"It's my pleasure. I'll inform you of any further developments."
They left quickly, Mr. Brakeman resuming his song where he left off.
"So, what do you make of Mr. Brakeman's information?" the Queen asked the Sheriff.
"Almost certainly Cretesian, perhaps trying to masquerade as Bittermarchians. We still have more questions than answers. Perhaps they were from Cretus, seeking revenge for the alleged massacre. Certainly not professionals or even competent. Without more information, it will be hard to connect them to a larger plot, if there is one."
The Queen was grateful for the fresh air as they emerged from the building. She wanted rest. She had hoped the last years of her rule would be as untroubled and peaceful as her previous 12 years of service, but it was not to be. So many troubles and so much strife. At least she had the drama of Baron Carver to offer some amusement.